Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of December, recording at 9:18 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. In terms of stock markets, well, they've mostly been treading water. Although within Asia, we've had a little bit of additional weakness, particularly for China, which has just drifted down to new lows, I think for 33 months. It hasn't broken decisively down on this latest move, but the point is it's still drifting downwards. And India, also weaker following that announcement yesterday on the banning of the foreign stores, or the suspension of discussions about letting the foreign stores in. Same thing. And European stock markets, they did rather better. And although mostly still ranging, they're firm. And they had a good day here today with some decent gains, excuse me, particularly in the Italian and Spanish markets. And of course, those have been in the hot seat recently. In the Americas, we had a reasonable day here. The Dow closed up 186 points. That's over 1.5%. S&P did slightly better, up nearly 1.69%, nearly 2% on the NASDAQ. So what Wall Street's done today is largely offset the losses that we had seen yesterday. And elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices sharply weaker here in the U.S. today, and also weaker in Europe. The U.S. dollar is a little bit easier today. Now, nothing significant though, and it's been mostly ranging here overall, taking its cue from what stock markets are doing. And precious metals, which have also been in a range, well, they were hit quite hard yesterday, or gold was at any rate. But it's not had any downside follow-through here today, although the performance is a bit tepid against that background of a stronger stock market. But if we consider commonality, platinum, which had been on the lower side of its recent range, is firmer by some $23, and silver, which was also hit hard yesterday. But it's regained about three-quarters of that decline, so that's not too bad. Industrial metals, a little bit steadier. They have been weak in recent months, but have lost downside momentum here recently. Agricultural commodities, they are still very much on the defensive. And that included today. Most of them were down today. Okay. So, what are the big themes that we should be talking about? Well, first, in terms of stock markets, I think it's not unreasonable to say that for much of this year, investors have been focused, or certainly really since September onwards, investors have been focused on worst-case scenarios. Now, I've often said that I think it's not wise to back the worst-case scenario, just as it would be unwise to back the best-case scenario when people are quite optimistic. Use those as contrary indicators. But let's discuss the worst-case scenario for a moment. And I can think of two things, one of them that will certainly concern all of you, And the other one that I veteran subscribers will have heard me mention on so many occasions, but let's take the Eurozone. Obviously, that remains the focal point of global economic concerns, I should say, the main focal point of global economic concerns, and rightly so. And today, we probably still have a consensus that it's not going to be very long before the euro actually breaks up. And that consensus, oh, maybe 2, 3 weeks ago, was quite strong. It's not a scientific measure, but it's certainly based on the reports that we see, the comments we hear, and so forth. Well, it could happen. But what we do know is that pretty much every fiber and sinew of the politicians and the technocrats and the bureaucrats within the Euro region have sworn up and down that they want to keep the whole thing together. The populations are a little bit more restless, but this is not something that's going to be decided that democratically, in all probability. And also, there's not a heavy movement to pull away from the euro among populations, but it's the officials, the government officials, that and the business community. Those are the ones that really count here, and there's a very strong stated consensus that all must be done to save the euro. Now, I try to see the world the way it actually is, rather than the way I think it should be. It's not always easy, or the way I want it to be. It's a little bit easier for me to be objective about the euro than, say, something in my own portfolio, for instance, and that makes sense from a behavioral standpoint. But I've always regarded the euro as a political construct. Now, whether we should have the single currency or not, the single currency is not the issue. What is the issue is, are they determined to keep it together? If so, they can, at a price, and at there's a price for everything, isn't there? Certainly a price for a breakup. And people can debate over that, but that's not the point here right now. But what is the point, very much for us as investors and traders, is which way are they leaning? And again, to repeat myself, they have said emphatically that they want to keep this together. Now, I take them at their word on this. If we were talking about one politician in a corner, then we would have a different view. But I take them at their word, as they say. Therefore, they can do this, and they have been in a very chaotic and disorderly meeting every day, crisis meetings every day and half the night. They have been moving towards this. I mean, my goodness, European politicians have seldom worked so hard, have they? Perhaps never, or at least not in modern times. And they are meeting with some success in that they are moving towards the fiscal union. The ECB is relaxing its very, very tough line. And so I actually think they're going to pull it off. And that doesn't mean they solved the debt crisis. It was almost a Freudian slip there. I almost said death crisis. Doesn't mean they're going to solve the debt crisis. That's going to be something that will be ironed out partly by defaults, as we saw with Greece, but more with inflation and austerity programs, payback, some payback. So it's going to drag on for a very, very long time. We know that. Fortunately, we don't invest in economies so much, but we do invest in companies, and Europe has a lot of companies that are very attractively valued right now, and where those are autonomies, big multinational players, they look interesting and have some very, very good yields. But it's going to be a slow growth region for a very long time, so one really does need the or need to pay more attention to the autonomies within Europe if in thinking of investing there. But I digress. What about this ch these chances of a euro breakup, which I said is a consensus view? Well, at Fuller Money, Owen and I rate that as less than 25%. Now, it may seem like a lot, and it's higher than we would like it to be, obviously. And I won't mince words on this. If we were to get any kind of disorderly and chaotic breakup of the euro, and I don't think it's could possibly take place on some sort of hand-holding kumbaya singing basis. So we get a disorderly breakup of the euro, and that would be worse than 2008. But again, I don't think that's going to happen, and so we would rate that risk as below 25% and falling, not increasing. Now, another risk that does concern me, I don't think it's that much of a short-term risk, but it's our old friend or foe, spike in crude oil. Now, that could happen. It shouldn't happen for fundamental reasons alone. It would probably take an exogenous shock. And I say that because demand for oil has slowed in the West. It's partly due to the very weak growth that we actually see. And while demand is rising in the growth economies around the world, led by Asia, it's not rising as fast as it was, and meanwhile, we are seeing the alternatives, or the renewables rather, gradually increasing their supply. So, really, on that basis, we ought to see oil prices somewhat lower, I feel, fundamentally. Now, technically, they're range bound here, but they did peak earlier in the year, and those peaks have not been threatened. If anything, we have in Brent a slight downward bias. WTI, which had been at a big discount of over $20 at one stage, but is now somewhat firmer. But I've always said it, I've said it for decades, a spike in crude oil prices causes recessions. And we saw it in 2008, and we've seen it this year. And certainly, if we were to get another spike, and what quantifies as a spike, we get another $20 on the price of crude oil. Against the background of the weak GDP growth that we see right now, that would cause serious problems, in my opinion. Now, that risk, unfortunately, is higher than I would like it to be. I'd put it could be as high as 50-50. Although, when we were talking about this, Owen said 60-40 against, and I think that's certainly right over the next few months. And I think it would take an exogenous shock, something going badly wrong within the producer nations. Now, the most worrying one that people have talked about for years would be if we were to see a military strike against Iran's nuclear installations. Now, I think that would really cause a dramatic spike. I think it would be well over $20 were that to occur. Again, I don't think that's going to happen because the people who would carry out that strike would realize that that would also cause a recession. I don't think the Israelis would do it on their own, and I think you'd find a very reluctant Obama administration in terms of doing that right now or anytime soon. And this is, we don't even get the next election until November, and the next president won't be inaugurated and in office until January of 2013. So I don't think there's going to be a push for that. I think they're going to work through or work on the basis of sanctions and moral persuasion, although that hasn't gotten them very far, and it's unlikely to. So I see a situation where Iran moves steadily closer to its bomb, and that's a disconcerting prospect. But I don't think we're going to see any kind of massive bombing take place. Now, your guess on that is obviously as good as mine. But those, I've outlined for you the two factors that concern me the most. Now, and we will get another oil spike at some stage. I mean, frankly, all we would have to do, and when I say all we would have to do, this may seem like a big ask or big wish, big hope, is when we next have global GDP growth synchronized in an expansion phase, and yes, it will happen, it's out there somewhere, then the upward pressure on crude oil is likely to be fairly remorseless if that occurs within the next few years, as I think it will. It's not really until we get into well into the next decade that I think we'll have far more shale oil production taking place, and the renewables will have advanced just that much more. Hopefully, we'll also not just hopefully, we will have more nuclear by then. So we'll have more sources of energy, and then at that stage, I would think that we will see, as I've said before, oil prices actually come down below today's levels in real terms, meaning, of course, inflation-adjusted terms. Given the amount of money printing that's going to take place and the prospect for a 1970s-type environment here regarding inflation picking up over time, not this year, well, except it's been pumping along at over 5% in the UK, and it's going to remain a problem over time. But we still also have a lot of deflationary pressures, as you know. We did have inflationary problems in Asia. Those are subsiding. Interestingly, China down to 4.2. Today on the figures announced, and that was up over 6 a couple of months ago, I believe, or back in September, I'm not sure which of those it was, but and India's inflation has probably peaked, and judging from food prices, well, certainly I can say without hesitation that food price inflation has peaked earlier this year and is going to be coming down. But again, oil's the big one overall. But having covered the two big threats to GDP growth and therefore stock market appreciation, let's look at the other side. And a dead cert, in my opinion, is that we're going to see more accommodative monetary policies, and that will be three-pronged. We've already got it with the USA, no change there. We are going to see, we are already beginning to see, an easier monetary policy in Asia. Now, that's a reversal of the tightening monetary policy. It'll be a partial reversal, and that's good news. If I have one concern about Asia, and I do have this concern, it is that they may move too slowly. China needs to act because there's really no such thing as a soft landing in property markets, or I'm not aware of them. But that doesn't mean the whole economy would need to experience a hard landing, but the property sector is obviously important in China, as it is in any country, but I think it's particularly important in China. So I think they excuse me, I think they need to ease more quickly. They're moving in the right direction at this stage. I hope India doesn't hold off too long, and I think probably they've already held off too long. India is still an underperformer, as is China. But again, monetary policy is very accommodative in the USA. It's becoming more accommodative now in the Asian region, or among all the growth economies. Actually, it was Brazil that started it, and it's got one of the best performing charts since it's started to cut interest rates among the growth economies. And I also feel that part of this Save the Euro program will definitely involve the ECB acting as lender of last resort, one way or another, and that the ECB will be printing plenty of euros, because what Europe really needs is not just constitutional reform and fiscal union. It needs pro-growth policies, and that is extremely important. And so I think they will try for that, and they certainly need to do that. So I think we're going to have over the next few months a shift here where monetary policy becomes increasingly accommodative. And really, there's no better tailwind for stock markets, particularly when investors have been really quite cautious, not to say outright bearish, than accommodative monetary policies. Add to which, there's a great deal of cash on the sidelines. There's been a lot of deleveraging. Now, that cash, when the Euro crisis moves off the front pages, then I think confidence is going to start to grow, and investors will start to invest more in equities, because you've got a lot of good valuations around the world, and that's attractive, provided you don't think that there's going to be some massive apocalyptic breakup of the euro. Okay, that's the way I see it. Now, 2011 has been kind of a diabolical year as far as I'm concerned. But 2012, well, people are not optimistic about it at this stage. Maybe they're a little bit too pessimistic. Then there's the old point that election years in the USA are usually bullish years. I wouldn't rely too heavily on that, but historically that's been the case. Okay, what about precious metals? Well, I said it was a tepid performance by gold in here today, after that big outside day that we saw to the downside yesterday. But nevertheless, monetary accommodation is a tailwind for gold as well. It is trading to the left or above its rising 200-day moving average. The concern, of course, when the accelerations that we saw, I think it was in April for silver and August for gold, because those are climactic moves and mark, in these instances, as you can see, at least medium-term tops. And I think it'll be confined to a medium-term top. So I think, and this is a favorable seasonable period. I think it's a reasonably good chance that we will see gold and probably palladium leading to the upside. And if that were to take place, commonality will be important on this. If we're going to get a good move in gold, we'll get a good move in all of them. And then that could be quite powerful following a very long lull period in here. The counter argument, negative argument, is, well, they've already gone up a heck of a long way, particularly gold and silver. And they don't yield, whereas people are more concerned about yield these days. So those are also reasonable arguments in here. So let the charts be the arbiter of that. But I see no evidence that the secular bull market is over. Industrial metals, well, they look oversold, but I think we may get, and I think we're probably entering a support building phase here as China gradually, or hopefully not so gradually, moves towards stimulating its economy once again, and as do other growth economies, demand for those metals is going to pick up. And what we also need to watch, which would be extremely important, will be the performance of agricultural commodities. And in terms of food price inflation, the news has been terrific in the last few months. I mean, these prices really have been coming down, and there's no evidence yet that these corrective phases are over. So we are getting the much needed reset in terms of commodity price inflation. What about the currencies? Well, the dollar is much preferred to the euro and sterling. Now, that does beg the question, might that be a contrary indicator? Well, overall, I think there's a good case for saying the currencies are going to be range bound for a while. As you know, the dollar picks up when fear rises, and it tends to abate when people feel a little bit and fall back, when people feel a little bit more confident overall. I think you've got 3 weak currencies here, but there is a case for saying that the euro ought to be and could easily be lower than the dollar level here today. And that would also apply to sterling. But, you know, as this euro crisis passes, assuming it does, which is our view, or at least it passes to the extent that it's no longer front page news, it's no longer hogging the limelight in terms of concerns, then that concern will shift a little bit more to the U.S. deficit situation and the impasse that we have in Congress, and the fact that nothing's going to be approved or agreed, it seems, between now and at least the beginning of 2013. So that's not exactly a reassuring factor. As Asia and other growth economies, Brazil, stimulate their economies, I think their currencies will improve somewhat, but probably not dramatically. And while we're still in a kind of a slow growth global environment, which is very much the case today, then they're not likely to do a whole lot. In terms of government bond prices, it's reasonable to assume that deflationary concerns plus all this quantitative easing can keep those so-called safe haven bonds, keep their yields down for a while longer. But endless monetary accommodation, endless printing, quantitative easing, you know that's Well, the last time we really saw that going on and on and on was in the build up to the 1970s, and it's going to be inflationary. So I think yields will move higher over the longer term. How quickly that happens remains to be seen, and it's a tough call here at this stage. But if we haven't seen the absolute lows for bunds and U.S. 10-year and 30-year bonds and Japanese JGBs, if we haven't, then it's going to require some sort of really grim scenario, such as the breakup of the euro that I don't think is going to happen. It would have to be a deeper recession than we see right now, but I'm not that pessimistic. A longer term basis, though, I think it's the case for some sort of mean reversion in terms of these long-dated government bond yields is overwhelming. And I think that's pretty much it. I think we've touched all the bases, and apologies if I missed out on anything that's of interest to you. Meanwhile, have a terrific weekend. All the best.